The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome in to the Under Center podcast on CSNChicago.com. I'm JJ Stankovic, joined as always at Hallis Hall by Mark Schanowski. And Mark, I think we're going to talk about the quarterback a little bit today.
Yeah, that seems like a popular topic of conversation with the fan base. So yeah, let's jump into it. Obviously, it's not a question of when Mitch Trubisky takes over. I think it's if. I'm not if, but when.
Yeah.
And it's the fans want to see him right away, but there are logical reasons to hold him back a little bit. We'll get into all of that.
Yeah, and you know, the issue with playing Mitch Trubisky right now is, I think, issue number one is that the schedule sets up where you have Pittsburgh this weekend. Obviously, Mitch Trubisky is not starting this game. The Bears have been abundantly clear that Mike Glennon is going to be the starter against Pittsburgh. But then you're probably not going to make a change for week four and give Mitch Trubisky his first game week of preparation for 3 days to face the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field. So if you're looking to circle a date, maybe it's week five. I'm running some numbers that I'm going to run in an article on CSNChicago.com this week about there have been 14 quarterbacks drafted in the first 10 picks of the last 20 NFL drafts. That's a lot of numbers to get into. But the point there is that let me run this back to get this right. 33 top 10 quarterbacks, 14 of which have made their debuts in the middle of a season. The average week of that debut is week six. So that is where, if you're looking to circle it, week five, week six for the Bears against Minnesota, against Baltimore, maybe that's where we look for right now.
Well, you have to factor in all the things that we don't know yet. You know, how is Mike Glennon going to play in the next couple of games? Will the Bears get a win up to that point? Will there be an injury that we're going to be talking about? All those things have to be considered as well. But I think in terms of the planning from a front office and coaching staff perspective, you kind of have to circle week five only because of the way the schedule breaks.
Right.
You know, you got Green Bay on a Thursday night, then they don't play again until 11 days later on a Monday night at home against the Vikings. And that would seem to be an opportunity for the coaching staff to game plan about Trubisky's individual talents, the fact that he can make throws on the run where Glennon can't. You can do more rollout plays with Trubisky that you can't run with Glennon. Those are all things I think the coaching staff and Ryan Pace are already discussing as to if we're going to pull the trigger on this, when is the right time to do it? You don't want to get in a situation where the schedule starts to mount up and the losses start to mount up and you're looking at 0-7, 0-8 and going, well, now we'll turn to the kid. And then at that point, the larger question becomes, you know, the future of the coaching staff and a lot bigger questions than Mitch Trubisky. But he is the future of the franchise at quarterback, and I'm sure they have discussions on a daily basis as to when the right time is to get him in there.
I mean, look, you know, John Fox kind of caused an uproar on Twitter when he said, you know, it's hard to evaluate someone after 2 weeks, and, you know, it by sounding like he wasn't considering Trubisky, I think you're absolutely right, Mark. They're having these discussions. There's no way the Bears walked into Hallis Hall on Monday after reviewing the film and didn't at least have the thought of when do we play the kid. That would be doing a disservice to themselves. It'd be doing a disservice to their job security. And, you know, and look, that ultimately when the Bears feel like Mitch Trubisky is ready to give them a better chance to win games than Mike Glennon, he's going to play. And right now they haven't got to that yet. We don't see what's going on behind the scenes in practice where Trubisky's running the scout team offense. We don't see what sort of growth, incremental growth he's made week to week. So, you know, I think at this point, whereas you may not want to trust the coaching staff to make the right decision, these guys aren't stupid. They're paid to do this, and they know their job security depends on them winning games.
Yeah, John Fox knows this is an important season for him to show some growth. Maybe not necessarily in the one-loss record, but in terms of development of some of the young players, taking the offense forward over what it's been the last couple of years, and showing some growth. I think that's what the fan base wants more than anything. That's what Ryan Pace wants to see more than anything, is a coaching staff that has been able to develop some young talent, take him to a level where, if not making them a winning program right now, you can at least see that it's out there, that they have the potential to be a team that can win some football games in the near term. And Trubisky is going to be the quarterback. It's a very difficult situation for any team that drafts a quarterback in the first round. When do we get him out on the field? And usually it's circumstances that, that weigh into the decision, whether it's an injury, whether it's the way the schedule breaks. I just think that, you know, right now, with the fact that the offensive line has not really come together, they have no running game, they've had lost their top two receivers to injuries, it's not the best situation to throw your highly touted quarterback into, risking potential injury or a series of bad performances which could affect his career long term.
Now, say this, we talk about the coaching staff maybe not wanting to put him in a bad situation where you risk an injury. But if that's the case, and they are thinking like that, then why was he on the field against the Cleveland Browns in the fourth quarter throwing passes in that final preseason game?
That, I think there was kind of a disconnect there between, you know, Dow Loggins and John Fox. You know, you remember that situation that both Mike Glennon and Mark Sanchez were over there in baseball caps being told, you're not coming in. So when they had an injury to Connor Shaw, Trubisky was the only option to go back in there.
Haven't had the ball off then.
But, yeah, that's where I said where the disconnect came in. Yes, he had to go back on the field. It didn't mean they had to run any plays. They could have knelt down or they were hand out every play and end the game. That was a horrible mistake by this coaching staff. And of course, Trubisky took a couple of hits late in that game. Those are the kind of things you never want to see done. But, you know, it was fourth preseason game. It was an emergency situation. And unfortunately, there was bad communication with the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think the fact that no one really wanted to talk about it afterwards.
Right. They know that, they know they screwed up.
Yeah, but I think the point there is, you know, okay, so we look at the offensive line and getting more and more optimistic that Kyle Long will be back. Mm-hmm. I think the Bears are, you know, they're hopeful he'll be back week three against Pittsburgh. If not, then you would think, you know, Green Bay by the end of the month. But now Josh Sitton's status is up in the air with the rib injury he suffered against Tampa Bay. So, you know, you get one guy back and you lose another. They just can't seem to catch a break on the offensive line. The running game has got to do better than 20 yards on 16 carries, whether that's a function of the offensive line not getting a good push and not letting Jordan Howard get to the second level, or Howard missing some blocks and, you know, missing some holes, or Tariq Cohen not really be able to get going. That this offense is going to run at its best when you can hand the ball off to Jordan Howard and be confident he can gain some yards and then set a little bit more up for Mike Glennon. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see where the offense goes against Pittsburgh and Green Bay, but I think if they're 0-4 and the offense looks more like it did against Tampa in those two games, you got to consider, you know, really seriously consider making a switch.
Well, one of the things that's kind of alarming is that a lot of the fan base and maybe even the coaching staff is looking at Kyle Long as a panacea for everything that ails them. And we don't even know what kind of player he's going to be when he comes back. Mm-hmm. I mean, he revealed some pretty gruesome details about his rehab from the ankle surgery, you know, talking about all his muscles that atrophied in that leg, and he had to work all the way from basically square one to build strength back in that leg. He had a setback, as you mentioned, by trying to force the issue by wanting to be ready for training camp, doing running before he was supposed to be doing it. That was a setback, and now, you know, he's being very cautious in terms of whether or not he thinks he can play. When he gets back in there, how many snaps can he handle? We don't know. You know, you mentioned Josh Sitton with the rib injury. We don't know his availability for Sunday. And Cody Whitehair, as we talked about, has played all three interior positions against Tampa Bay. It's just not a formula for success for the offense. And, you know, obviously Kevin White and Cameron Meredith aren't coming back. And it's not a formula for success for a young quarterback, and I think that's why they're being so cautious.
Yeah, we talked about it on this podcast last month. I talked to J.B. Long, who does the radio play-by-play for the Los Angeles Rams, and about Jared Goff last year. And it sort of is shaping up to maybe be a similar situation to Mitch Trubisky, where you have a coach last year in Jeff Fisher, whose job was on the line, and, you know, Case Keenum wasn't getting it done for that offense. He puts in Jared Goff. They lose seven straight games to end the year. And when I asked Benny Cunningham about it, who was on that Rams team, he said, you know, look, it wasn't just Goff. We just didn't make enough plays around him. And you look at that roster, there wasn't the receiving core that you needed. The offensive line was in shambles. Defenses were keying on Todd Gurley and not letting him be productive. And you see some signs that it could be similar with the Bears this year. I think the one thing that could go in Trubisky's favor on that is that maybe we shouldn't discount his ability to make everyone around him better. Maybe you put Trubisky in there and all of a sudden, you know, Kendall Wright and Zach Miller become go-to targets, and it opens up more for Jordan Howard. So I think, you know, the ability to steal a John Fox phrase of, you know, raising all boats, maybe Trubisky has that ability, but we won't find that out until he actually plays.
Dow Loggins referred to it on Wednesday in his meeting with the media, saying that, you know, they're facing defenses that are having 8-9 guys in the box,
right,
and daring them to throw. And that's impacted Jordan Howard, who's been dealing with a shoulder injury, which I'm sure has impacted his effectiveness as well. But I think the defenses they're seeing right now, they realize that, hey, they're not going to throw the ball on the field.
Yeah.
We're going to put everybody near the line of scrimmage. We're going to shut down their running game and force Glennon into maybe challenging, so the defense is a little bit further down the field. But to this point, he's not doing it. I mean, you know, his longest completion is, what, 22 yards?
Yeah.
And he's just not challenging the defense. Sometimes you just have to throw the ball down the field just to let the DBs know you might do it. You know, even if the pass is incomplete.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a function of the play calling or just Glennon's conservativeness, but it's been tough to watch. And if that doesn't change real soon, I think they may have to consider going to Trubisky, just because with the confidence that he has in himself and his ability to escape the pocket, he is going to challenge the defense down the field. Whether it's a good percentage play or not, he's going to do it.
So let's, you know, if we're looking at the best case scenario for Mike Glennon, it probably looks a lot like the Falcons game, where, you know, he kind of dinked and dunked his way to a pretty productive day, but only 17 points, and it wasn't good enough to win. Granted, if Jordan Howard or Josh Bellamy catches a pass at the end of the game, it might be good enough to win. But you go with that, and then you go to what he did against Tampa, where he still completed 31 of 45 passes. If the Bears don't drop six balls in the second half,
the three turnovers were lethal.
But I mean, that's the thing, you can't turn the ball over if you're sort of the quote-unquote game manager. A game manager cannot turn the ball over, and when he does, it throws out whatever good he did in the game. You know, the Bears talked about how good he was on third down, but if you're turning the ball over on first or second down, it doesn't matter. You can't. This offense cannot afford to turn the ball over multiple times in a game. Otherwise, it'll be more of what we saw against Tampa Bay.
We've heard so much from the coaching staff about Mike Glennon's veteran experience, the fact that he's more adept at identifying coverages and reading NFL defenses and making progressions, you know, throughout the field. But to this point, we haven't seen any of that. He generally locks in on a one target, which is in the short to intermediate range, and whether he's covered or not, he tries to force the ball in there. Now, if you look at his raw stats, 31 for 45 for 301, you're going, oh, that's not a bad day. But the turnovers got him beat before the game was a quarter and a half old, and they had no chance to come back in it. And then even down by 26 points, no shots down the field, no ability to read the coverage and pick up different reads and options in the passing game. It's always first read, throw the ball. And if he doesn't change that, the Bears are not going to win many games this year.
So I'm interested to see what the offense looks like with Marcus Wheaton coming back. And we should be cautious in talking about Wheaton as this, like, I don't want it to seem like he's the solution to the Bears' offense, because there's a reason why the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't keep him around after last year. And granted, he only played three games, but he's not a number one receiver on an NFL team. Otherwise, he would have got number one receiver money in the offseason or number two receiver money in the offseason. He kind of got the two-year, $12 million, still kind of on a prove-it contract.
Wouldn't you like that prove-it contract?
That'd be great. I'd take that.
We'd sign up for that.
I'd sign up for a prove-it contract any day. But he does have the ability to stretch the field. I asked Ben Roethlisberger, Ben Roethlisberger was asked on his conference call, like, what he does well downfield. And I thought it was interesting that Roethlisberger immediately pointed to, well, he uses his hands well to get open. Well, the injury Marcus Wheaton's had,
yeah,
has
the pinky,
his
finger,
pinky,
yeah,
where he told a group of us today that the bone was sticking out of his pinky when he fractured it. So that gives you a sense of how serious that injury was and how slowly it's taken him to come back. There's a reason behind that. But you add him into the offense, and maybe it does lead to just some deeper throws, just to let the defense know it's there. So you do have to maybe play a safety with some help over the top instead of cheating that guy down into the box.
He had some good years with the Steelers. I think the 1 year he averaged 17 yards of reception, which is very impressive for any receiver. And hopefully he can be a guy that will challenge down the field. And it was almost comical during Mike Glennon's news conference where he talked about the fact we're evolving into a speed offense by adding Wheaton. And I'm like, I haven't seen any speed from those other receivers. And I know he's referring some to using Cohen out of the backfield and things like that. But there's not a lot of speed on this Bears offensive unit, and Marcus Wheaton will help in that area. But as you mentioned, the seriousness of that pinky injury, he may be a little bit gun-shy going for the ball. And if they've already had so many drops in the first two games, you hate to think that he's going to rush his way back in there and just add to that total.
I'll say this. I don't think he's rushing his way back in there. You figure, he quote-unquote graduated catching real footballs about a week ago, and He could have rushed himself back in there probably and played on Sunday and contributed to those drops, not been as effective. But there's something to be said for him waiting until he's fully recovered, fully confident that he can catch the football, that he can use his hands to get open, he can run block, do all those things that made him a pretty good player with the Pittsburgh Steelers back a couple years ago. So I'm interested to see kind of what the offense looks like with him in there. And look, Mike Glennon, for as bad as he was against Tampa Bay, if he plays like he did against Atlanta, against Pittsburgh, and against Green Bay, he's not losing his job, even if the Bears are 0-4. That will give the Bears reason to be like, we'll wait until we're 100% sure Mitch is ready if Mike Glennon turns in those performances. But if he turns the ball over 2-3 times again, then why not put in the kid who can make probably more plays, who may be a turnover liability?
Well, I think you get back to what we talked about earlier is John Fox's job status. I mean, at some point, he's got to say, if I don't win some games, I'm out of here. Now, he's at a point in his career where, he's coached a number of years. He's obviously made a lot of money. Maybe at this point, he doesn't really care all that much. But if he wants to continue on in this job, if Mike Glennon's turning in losing performance after losing performance, he's got to say, this kid played well in the preseason. Let's get him out here. I know there's risks involved, and he may make some mistakes, but he's a better option than the guy who's dinking and dunking and not right. putting any points on the board. I think that it's probably going to happen in week five unless we see some kind of really strange blow-up performance by the offense in these next 2 weeks, going up against a really good Pittsburgh defense. Green Bay's defense isn't all that good, but you're playing them in Lambeau in a short week. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. But I'll be surprised if they're 0-4, if Fox isn't in that meeting room going, we got to play Trubisky now.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking at the some other reasons in Trubisky's favor for him to play beyond just the playmaking ability and the change at quarterback, maybe it just gives that room hope.
Hope is a good thing. Yeah,
the guys in that locker room are behind Mike Glennon right now, but they're not stupid. When they see in practice that Mitch Trubisky is the better quarterback, if he's not playing, they're not going to be happy about that.
Well, there's no question about it. You're going to have some guys in the room going, why are we sticking with this statue in the backfield
and can't evade
pressure? I mean, at some point, you're going to lose the locker room if you're 0-whatever and you haven't made a change.
But it's delicate because if you put in Trubisky too early while the locker room still has Glennon's back, as they do right now, then you risk losing the locker room again. And, you might have the team wondering, okay, well, so are we punting on the season by putting this rookie in? Well,
no, I don't think anybody thinks that. I think there's a lot of guys in that locker room thinking that's the better option already. And the bottom line, there's very few guaranteed contracts in the NFL. This is a year-to-year, sometimes week-to-week profession. And these guys know they have to win. So if Trubisky, they see the potential in him. We heard Zach Miller on Monday talking almost glowingly about Trubisky's development and saying, the kid gets it, he's smart, he can make plays down the field. Especially the skill guys, they want a guy in there who can throw the ball down the field and make some plays, and that's what Trubisky can offer them.
Maybe this was just the company line going, but, I asked Kendall Wright after the game Sunday, the guy who's, the most targeted by Glennon, has played with him quite a bit already. I asked him, okay, tell me why you guys are confident in him. And he basically said, look, I know you guys in the outside, in the media, you guys may not be confident in him, but if you actually watch the game, you'll see why we're confident in him.
And we did watch the game. It didn't go that way.
It was sort of the football player, go back and watch the tape, and
sure,
you'll
sure.
see why. But he was being honest. I don't think he was BSing me.
You know,
that
veterans are going to stick up for fellow veterans. I mean, that's kind of the badge of honor in the locker room.
But Kendall Wright is one of those guys who's on a one-year prove-it contract who, you know, coming off a pretty rough ending to his career in Tennessee, he's got to be productive to get another contract and make his money. He's not going to stand for quarterback play that he thinks could be better.
But he's also smart enough to know that he's not going to walk into a full-blown quarterback controversy by saying something to the media that's going to cause this division. I mean, that's the last thing a veteran player wants to do. I think everyone knows what's going on here, and if they don't start winning some games, there will be a quarterback change.
I think that we can definitely agree on that. All right, we're going to take a break here on the Under Center podcast and be right back talking about this weekend's game and that will be started by Mike Glennon.
Right.
Cubs Post Game Live, sponsored by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, with David Kaplan and David DeJesus. Hear from Cubs players inside the locker room. Get a live look inside Joe Maddon's post game press conferences and more.
Welcome back to the Under Center podcast on CSNChicago.com. We got a game this weekend against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It will be started by Mike Glennon. The defense isn't really the story right now for the Bears, but how they go up against Antonio Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, Ben Roethlisberger, that could be this game could get ugly real quick, or the defense could keep it close enough where even if the offense doesn't really move the ball well or they're turning it over, that this maybe could be a little bit closer than we think, sort of like the Atlanta game.
Yeah, I mean, I think going into the Atlanta game, most Bears fans were thinking, let's hopefully keep it close, maybe have a chance to, you know, steal it at the end, and that's exactly the way it turned out. Defense held up very well against the Falcons. They were put in horrible situations in the Tampa Bay game because of the turnovers. Overall, I thought the defense was okay, you know, not great, but they held their own and turned into a respectable effort. I don't think the defense is going to be the biggest issue in this Pittsburgh game. Bears are going to have to find a way to score some points. And as you mentioned with the Steelers, they handled a good Minnesota team very easily last Sunday. And obviously Sam Bradford didn't play, which made the Steelers' job a lot easier. But they were also able to put, I think it was like 29 points.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of weapons. Roethlisberger, even though he flirted or talked about retirement at the end of last season, he's still at the top of his game. They have a good running attack with Le'Veon Bell, and they have a number of good receivers with Brown and Bryant and the draft pick, Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yep.
So it's going to be a big challenge for the defense, and I think what most people are hoping is that you avoid the turnovers. Against the Falcons, they didn't turn it over, and they were able to stay in the game for four quarters. In the Tampa Bay game, they turned it over left and right. They were out early. And then the same thing is going to happen in the Pittsburgh game. They cannot turn the ball over, or it'll get out of hand quickly.
Yeah, and no matter, you know, I think Akeem Hicks said it after the game Sunday, where he basically pushed back on the narrative that, you know, the defense didn't get a whole lot of good opportunities to make stops. Or he said, look, just because they have the ball in their hands doesn't mean they have to score. But at the same time, when Tariq Cohen fumbles a punt and they get the ball in the 13-yard line,
you're going to score there.
Jameis Winston throws a perfect back shoulder pass to Mike Evans, you're going to score there.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about that. But I think the concern for the defense, one was that, you know, those three penalties, the holding penalties on third down, two by Danny Trevathan, one by Willie Young, those cannot happen against a Pittsburgh offense as good as, you know, what they're going to face. It's kind of like, you know, an error in baseball where you give a team a fourth out, they're probably going to score. Same thing in football. You give a team a first down on a third down that you should have got a stop on, they're probably going to go down and score, especially one as good as Pittsburgh. And the other thing, too, there wasn't as much pressure on Jameis Winston as I think you would expect. Leonard Floyd didn't really – I think he maybe had one hurry on Jameis Winston. They got to get more out of him. You know, Eddie Goldman had a good game. He got a sack. Mitch Unrein actually had a pretty decent game. But, you know, they got to get more from Leonard Floyd. Willie Young had a sack. That, you know, that was another promising thing there. But – They got to get Leonard Floyd unleashed. It's now two games where he doesn't have a sack. You kind of thought this is maybe the year where he ascends and he gets double-digit sacks in year two. And so far we really haven't seen him get to the quarterback a whole lot.
there really haven't been a lot of situations where they can kind of turn themselves loose and go after the quarterback.
Yeah,
there was
too.
Some of that in Atlanta, but they were behind so quickly and by so many points against Tampa Bay. Second half was just basically, let's
like
run
a
out
preseason
the clock.
Game.
Yeah, they weren't going to really challenge the Bears with their passing game. Roethlisberger will challenge them. He has the weapons to go down the field, and you're right. They have to get some pressure on him. You need more from Floyd. You need more from Willie Young. Get some pressure up the middle from Eddie Goldman and make life miserable for the quarterback, and that's something that is always going to be part of the Bears' game plan because the defensive front seven is supposed to be the strength of this unit. They're supposed to be able to get consistent pressure on the quarterback, supposed to be able to shut down the run and try to make life miserable for opposing offenses. And I think they've got a shot to keep the game within reach. The key is turnover. You can't make those mistakes that Glennon made against Tampa.
Yeah, you know, that's if this game delves into another game of mistakes by the offense, the Bears are not going to win. Or on special teams, they're not going to win. They have to play clean. And, you know, kind of just going back to that Atlanta game, outside of Austin Hooper's two big catches, they played a clean game on all three phases. And that wasn't good enough to win. And, you know, the margin for error for this team is just so low that you make one mistake, one critical mistake, and all of a sudden there goes the game and you lose.
Well, it always goes back to the talent level. I mean, the Bears had 16 players in for tryouts this week. I mean, they know that the talent on the roster is not what it's supposed to be. They're going to try to start working on it by maybe improving some of the lower levels and work their way up. But they've already lost a number of frontline guys to injuries. You know, the latest was Nick Kwiatkowski. We don't know how long he's going to be out as they continue to evaluate his pectoral injury. But they have so many injuries right now, which goes back to last year where you had all the injury issues, that, you know, the roster's not deep enough to withstand that, and it's going to be a survival mode for these next few weeks to see what kind of football team do you have, who can we really count on, and can we find some weapons emerging in the offense? Can they make more use of Adam Shaheen, who they were all excited about during the off-season workout program,
who was open on the pass that Glennon had picked off by Quan Alexander, Deion Sims.
They're going to have to find some offensive weapons. Cohen has been encouraging. Obviously, the thing that sticks out about week two is the bad decision on the fumbled punt, but he did catch eight more passes. Mm-hmm. He's become a factor in that passing game. He's become a nice option in terms of getting the ball in space and seeing if he can do something. And I think as the season goes along, some of those short passes, he's going to turn into big plays.
Yeah.
Right now, people look at him on tape, and they know that he is going to be the primary outlet valve for Mike Glennon, and they're kind of ganging up on him. So there's going to be a couple defenders waiting for him. But, you know, maybe they can find a way to, you know, fake him on the flat, get him cutting up the field and make a long play that way, because he almost caught that one long pass against Atlanta that was just overthrown.
So do you see a way the Bears win this game?
I don't see a roadmap for it unless Pittsburgh turns the ball over and puts you in plus territory and gives you a chance for some easy scores. Either that or you get some points in the special teams. I think Pittsburgh is just too prolific of an offense for the Bears to match them score for score. You know, if the game gets over 20 points, I think that's more than this offense can handle right now.
You know, what was that narrative about Ben Roethlisberger that he's not good on the road? I think some of our CSN fantasy experts were talking about that during a live draft we did.
Yeah, maybe from a fantasy perspective, but he still finds a way to win a lot of those low-scoring games.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. I'm looking at his numbers from last year. On the road, the Steelers were still 5-3.
Right.
With Ben Roethlisberger as their quarterback.
And he's tough as they come. You know, you can't shake him with a couple of hits. He's going to hang in
there. Even if Ben Roethlisberger doesn't have a good game, the Steelers still were able to win quite a few of those against opponents that, you know, like looking at, you know, some on here. Well, I guess some of these aren't that good, like Cleveland, Indianapolis.
Yeah, that division was pretty bad last
year. Yeah, but they're still able to win if Ben Roethlisberger is a bad game. That's the sign of a good team, whereas the Bears are really not able to win if Mike Glennon is a bad game.
Well, the roadmap is to do what they did against Atlanta. Avoid any turnovers. Turnovers have to be zero. You can't even turn over once. They can't make any mistakes. Hopefully you find a way to utilize Marcus Wheaton to loosen up the defense a little bit, and maybe you use Tariq Cohen down the field as a receiving option to challenge the defense, because if Pittsburgh's coming with those blitzes, if they're shutting down the run game, it's going to be a long afternoon at Soldier Field.
Could be a very productive day for Ryan Shazier.
It could be, yeah.
So I did a prediction on last week's podcast where I
we should probably stay out of the prediction business.
I mean, I'm going to own it, saying I picked the Bears to win 23-21.
Yeah, I picked the Bears
as well. Pause for laugh track.
I picked the Bears as well, so we're both in that same boat.
So I'm going to go and say Steelers 31, Bears 16.
Okay, that's probably about right. I'm going to stay out of the prediction game.
Okay, good for you.
It really doesn't serve any real purpose.
Good for you for
staying out. I just hope that they don't turn the ball over, and maybe Marcus Wheaton is a bigger threat deep than what we know. I mean, we've seen him in Pittsburgh. He had a 200-yard receiving game a couple of years ago. This is a guy that can be a very prolific receiver. We don't know where his confidence level is with that finger that he fractured, but, you know, he's got to be better than what we've seen so far. So let's hope that Glennon plays a clean game and they can keep it close for four quarters.
That sounds about the most optimistic we can get.
That's all we can
game.
Do right now. Hopefully it gets better as the year goes along.
All right, well, stick with us here on CSNChicago.com for complete coverage leading up to and after the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Remember, you can tune in to Bears pre- and post-game live at 11 a.m. Central Time before Bears-Steelers and then immediately following the game. For Markson, screwed up the end of that.
I also want to promote that at 10:30 on Sunday night, Dave Wannstedt will be in studio to join me for Inside the Huddle. Coach is always great. He brings tons of energy, great analysis as he goes over some of the key plays on the touchscreen. So win or lose, you want to make sure to tune in to CSN at 10:30 Sunday night for Inside the Huddle with Dave Wannstedt.
I really enjoyed his breakdown of Mitch Trubisky and Mike Glennon from the weekend.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. I mean, this is a guy that spends his weekend in Los Angeles doing college work for Fox, and then he does a Sunday NFL show in the morning, flies across the country, and he's fired up and ready to go everywhere.
Love it. Gotta love it. Well, yeah, you definitely want to check that out. That'll do it for us from Hallis Hall. For Mark Schanowski, I'm JJ Stankovitz. This has been the Under Center Podcast on CSNChicago.com.